This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I think we got to ask Ali her opinion on Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, we will next time she's in here.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a flair about him. And I sense a few people saying, oh, people only are intrigued by him because he's kind of goofy or what have you.
Has a mustache and wears a bandana.
Don't make that mistake. I think his flair is just more evidence of he's got that kind of swashbuckling personality of a quarterback that leads a guy to be a good quarterback. It's more of a byproduct of his quarterbacking prowess than it is anything that just, yeah, makes him more popular. The kid's done some really good things as a quarterback, with his arm, too, with his arm and with his legs, and he did it last night in really bad weather conditions.
Yeah.
Horrible weather conditions. And a night where, if Gardner Minshew had a bad game, I think you could have easily said in that game, oh, wow, both quarterbacks really struggled because of the weather conditions. But because Gardner Minshew has a really good game last night, you look at Mariota, and you think, this guy was a high draft pick?
Right.
Why is this guy... Marcus Mariota, a top draft pick, and why is Gardner Minshew a sixth rounder?
Yeah, and look, if Leonard Fournette is able to extend that football over the goal line against the Houston Texans, look, I said earlier in the show that if they get that 2-point conversion and the Jags are 2-1 right now, that Minshew is the biggest story in the league. They're 1-2. They lost that game to the Texans. They won last night. Seth, you and I have SportsCenter on in here. The lead thing is there's a huge screen behind the two anchors that says Minshew Mania on the back of it. But if they were for a team that's 1-2, but if they were 2-1 right now, their schedule over the next six games is like the all-star. It's like the parade of teams who have quarterback issues right now. They've got the Panthers on the schedule. They've got the Saints on the schedule. They've got the Jets on the schedule. They've got the Bengals. They have quarterback issues because their quarterback's not very good. They have the Texans in London is the last game in this stretch. They, like the Texans, have a bye in week 10. I know they're only 1-2, but if you look at their schedule and who they play, the Jags, they could very well be. I think they very well could be. They could be a 5-4 football team.
You know what I think is happening right now in the NFL, and it's taken teams a while to figure it out. It's that because the quarterback position has changed for multiple reasons, players are protected more now, the rules have loosened up a little bit, there's things that make the college game easier to bring up to the NFL game now because they've changed the rules a little bit, but there's one trait that used to be really, really important for quarterbacks that isn't nearly as important anymore, and teams need to figure it out, and it's height. Height used to actually matter because quarterbacks used to stand back in the pocket. And they needed to be able to see downfield. And it still helps, don't get me wrong. But some teams are still valuing height above and beyond athleticism. And I don't think you can do that anymore. I don't think you can do it anymore because the athleticism matters enough and they can get guys moving outside the pocket and they can incorporate the zone reads and everything into it to where height doesn't matter nearly as much. To where guys like Gardner Minshew, now Gardner Minshew he had a nomadic college existence.
Yeah, very jagged
path.
So he
only one year at Washington State where it's hard to figure out exactly what he was.
Good year, though.
Yeah, really good year. He's Pac-12 player of the year.
Yeah.
So,
but your point's a good one. Community college.
Yeah.
Mississippi, you know, all this other stuff.
But I think if you look at what he's able to do with his arm and what he's able to do with his legs, there's reason to think, okay, this guy probably should have gotten drafted a little bit higher in the draft. He's played three games in the NFL. I'm not saying that he's awesome or anything yet, but I think there's more potential than people saw.
And maybe where we see what you're talking about, teams that aren't looking at the height thing as much, let's face it, it's being embraced. The last two number one overall picks are undersized quarterbacks out of air raid type systems.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield last year and Kyler Murray this year. But maybe what it does is some of these guys who are on the margins, like a Gardner Minshew, instead of being a 6th-round pick, the guy will be a 3rd-round pick, that kind of thing. Because Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield won Heisman trophies. Mm-hmm. They're undeniably talented. They were, Baker not so much. He had to walk on a couple times. But Kyler Murray was a big-time recruit and a big-time athlete. He was drafted in baseball in the top 10 also. My point is, there were pedigree reasons to draft both of them as high as they did. Like you said, Gardner Minshew was a much bigger question mark, and it hurts when not only is your background a question mark, but your height is a question mark. You're saying maybe some of the teams start to ignore that, and guys who, like Gardner Minshew, was a sixth-round pick, maybe he's a fourth or a third-round pick.
Look at who's in charge in Jacksonville. It's Tom Coughlin, and Coughlin's always wanted a big, tall, prototype-looking quarterback, which is ironic because some of the most success he had was with Mark Brunell, who's not as tall. He's a lefty. He's an athletic runner and didn't fit the diet. But Coughlin kind of stumbled into Mark Brunell.
Yeah.
That wasn't a guy that they had picked as their guy. He just ended up playing his way into it. Even though they traded for him, but it wasn't like the guy. So I think that right now you have Nick Foles, who's 6'6", looks like the prototype, but can't do some of the things that Gardner Minshew can do. And it'll be interesting to see what happens a few weeks from now when Nick Foles is healthy and back. What if Gardner Minshew goes on a tear here?
That's what I'm saying. If they're 5-4 or 6-3 at the bye week,
yeah.
You know, boy, that's tough. I mean, you just gave Nick Foles $45 million
guaranteed
like a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
This isn't, the people are going to compare it with the Bledsoe and the Brady thing, especially with the sixth round pick part of it. It makes for a really interesting parallel. You're right. Pump the brakes. He's 1-2. He just had his first win last night at home against a team that's not very good.
He played well enough to have a comeback win versus the Texans last
week. He did.
Like, the win is all that matters, but he played well enough. He did everything to put them in place to win that game.
And he made plays.
Right.
You know, like he, that
in the
fourth
quarter,
down,
right.
The fourth down scramble. Like, that was a play that flew in the face of the guy's background, pedigree,
right,
experience level, all those things. Like, the guy's a cool customer.
So there's that.
Yeah.
And
the other thing people seem to be talking about a lot from last night's game is the officiating. Speaking of Tom Brady, he tweeted last night, "Too many penalties, just let us play." Then he tweeted shortly thereafter, "I'm turning off this game. I can't watch these ridiculous penalties anymore." I would remind people that are attributing Brady with complaining about the officials that are giving him credit for that gimmick, because I'm seeing it on the ticker on the bottom of the screen up here on SportsCenter that Tom Brady tweeted during the game. J.J. Watt was there first this past weekend complaining about the holding.
There's a couple holding calls out there that it's every week. And, you know, the ref literally admitted to me that the guy held me on one play and he didn't throw the flag. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. When after a play, I look over to the ref and he says, "Yes, I saw him hold you, but I didn't throw the flag." So, I'll probably get fined for this and that's fine, but I don't know what to do with that.
But he's complaining about not enough holding calls. So Tom, J.J. Watt's complaining that there aren't enough holding calls, when in fact there's over 60% more holding calls through week two of this season.
I just meant complaining in general.
Right. But it is interesting that this is where I am.
But you're right, they're opposite arguments.
Yeah, this is when it's notable that Brady, an offensive player, is complaining about them calling too many penalties in general, but some of the offensive holding calls. Well, no, he would complain about that now, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Some of the offensive holding calls were pretty bad. So I think that...
Is that the number, 60% more?
Yeah, they had Pereira on there. One of the old officials was on there on the broadcast last night talking about how far up the penalties were. And he said that that's the thing they get the most complaints from the coaches about, that there should be more holding penalties.
Did he show any charts or graphs, or did he just throw it out there?
No, there was a chart.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it was...
Sometimes numbers get thrown out.
No. It was a huge rise through the first 2 weeks of the season.
Okay.
And what Pereira was saying was that that's apparently the biggest complaint they get from coaches about non-calls is things that should have been holding calls. So now it's going to turn into people complaining. Nobody likes this many play stoppages.
That's the thing. Like I think the only thing that most of the audience cares about is how do they care about it as fans? And as fans, it slows down the game. I hate it. And I know as a defensive lineman, former defensive lineman, you know, you probably want to side with your defensive lineman brethren to some degree.
Well, I'd like to, but some of those holding calls were, it was, okay, technically a hold, but that's the kind of thing you should have been able to get out of that. That's a quick arm swipe, and then you make the play. What are you whining about the hold call for it? And I don't think some of those should have been. The borderline holds usually shouldn't be called.
Yeah.
JJ complaining about the holding calls, I'm a little bit torn on how to address that, because, yes, he's always gotten a lot of holds against him that don't get called. he wasn't held nearly as egregiously in that last game as he's had to deal with in the past. And I think a lot of them are holds that in the past wouldn't have slowed him down either. That's the holding wasn't the reason that JJ didn't have as productive a game as we're used to seeing in the second game.
To be fair, yeah. If what he's saying is true, JJ, in that cut, like if a referee said to me, like, yeah, he held you,
yeah,
and I didn't call it, that would make me angry too.
That
seems to be the part that he's, you know, we're having some fun with this. That seems to be the part he's most verklempt about.
It does drive you crazy because they'll say things like, well, you wouldn't have made the play. How do you know? The guy could have cut back. Well,
especially for J.J. Watt.
When you're backside of the play, they'll say, well, you wouldn't have made the play or you weren't at the point of attack. Right. But, yeah, I chase those things down is what J.J.'s thinking.
Yeah. Maybe you haven't seen my film. Yeah. My name is J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
I'm a 3-time defensive player of the year.
Yeah. I don't know. But I didn't think it was any worse than he's seen in the past. Yeah. I think that he's like a... He's a half step short of making a lot of plays that you used to see him. Last week, he had a bunch of pressures. He got close to the quarterback bunch, but that's not, in his mind or anybody else's mind, that's not what makes J.J. Watt J.J. Watt.
Right.
It's a matter of, okay, over the next couple weeks, do you close the gap on that half step that you're missing
right
now?
Yeah. And you think he will?
I don't know. We'll wait and see. Yeah. I would imagine, based on everything else I've ever seen from him, yeah, at some point, he's going to get old. He's had so many surgeries. And at some point, it's going to catch up to him. He's 30 years old now, which sounds young, but his body has really been through the ringer. So I would expect, if I had to handicap it,
yeah
he's going to start making those plays. One of these years, it's not going to happen. Yeah. One of these years, he's not going to start making
the plays. Purely pragmatically, there's part of me. JJ's been unbelievable for this city, and I love watching him play. He's a great guy. Just purely pragmatically, there's part of me that's like, man, if it's going to go downhill, I'd rather they do it before they give him another $70 million guaranteed.
Look, you'd rather have it, but I'd rather have that happen 2 years from now when he's in the last year of his contract.
My point is, if it turns out that this is the year he becomes, by his standards, pedestrian,
yeah,
then I don't know that the team's going to give him another $70 million guaranteed.
He's a hard one. The Andre Johnson one, when Bill O'Brien had that talk with Andre Johnson, and Andre got PO'd about it because Bill O'Brien, according to Andre, said that he was only going to get 40 catches the next year.
Right.
Those are the hard moments. Those are the really hard moments, and it's hard for the athlete. It's hard for the coach. Over time, you forget about it. Look, Andre Johnson's on this staff right now working for Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, exactly.
You get over it.
Yeah.
With JJ, it's going to be a tough one. It's whenever it does happen. But maybe he kind of... Maybe he sees it, and when it's time to retire, he retires. Maybe he wants to squeeze an extra 5 years out. I think of Warren Sapp when he went off to the Raiders.
Yeah.
And it's almost easier if you go to another team.
Yeah.
If you go out to pasture with another team, you can still get a few years left, and it's not as painful as watching it on your own team.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. To be very clear, I want JJ to have 20 sacks this year. I don't want people to think like, boy, I hope JJ's terrible this year so they don't have to pay him. I'm just saying, like, if it's going to happen, I'd rather it not happen at a time where they've already given him another big contract, and now all of a sudden you got a 33-year-old guy who can't play anymore at the level you're paying him at. The other big story last night out of that game was Jalen Ramsey. What was notable about Jalen Ramsey's locker after the game, and what are the 5 most likely places, and which one's the best for the Texans, quite honestly, for Jalen Ramsey to wind up? We'll do that next. All right, so apparently, according to some media members in Jacksonville, Jalen Ramsey has cleaned out his locker.
Did somebody clean the locker out for him?
I don't know. His locker is clean.
Since he was playing well last night, he gave a bun reception over the middle. But otherwise, every time I saw him, he looked like he was having a pretty damn good game.
So you're saying he's better than the 89th best cornerback in football?
Whatever Marcellus Wiley was weirdly saying the other day, which I give Marcellus a lot more credit than that. I don't know if some intern fed him stats or something right before the segment began.
I guarantee they handed him the Pro Football Focus rankings. Guarantee. Else do you have rankings? What other metric are you ranking running backs, or I'm sorry, cornerbacks, that goes to 89th in anything?
Football Outsiders has some stuff like that, but I don't know. Yeah, 89th would make him... 89th would mean he was maybe a slot corner on the worst team in the league or something.
Darren Colvin.
It was a weird thing for Marcellus. I like and respect Marcellus Wiley. I'm going to put that up if it's just a weird moment in his career.
I'm going to say he had a charity event the night before.
Yeah, it was.
And he didn't have time to prep.
He just rolled in and kind of.
He texted the intern.
Something. Yeah.
He texted the intern. He's like, bro, I need a take on Jalen Ramsey.
Give me some stats on Jalen Ramsey. That's what they gave him. And he thought. which happens sometimes. I've got this stat. I got to make a take out of it. Here I go.
And that's one where the crazier the stat, the more bombastic you feel like you can become.
Yeah, end up
like, really? Are you kidding? He's 89th at something?
You get talked about on, I don't know.
Shows
I swear,
like this, yeah.
Some of these guys, some of the debate shows, it really seems sometimes, doesn't it, like they're intentionally given a bad take because they know it's going to be talked about.
Yeah, right.
Because they're otherwise really, when otherwise
Skip
really.
Bayless has made a career.
Right. Well, really intelligent people gives these takes that are so curious and weird and wrong that you feel like it's got to be by design.
Right.
It's just got to be intentional. So anyway, he's a really good cornerback. And as DeAndre Hopkins will attest to, and it looks like a lot of people are saying there's no way in hell he plays last night if there's a trade in place. I would agree with that because let's say the Kansas City Chiefs had already agreed to a trade with Jacksonville. One of the conditions of the trade would probably be, look, if he gets injured, the deal's off. So
I would think so.
So when he played, what I assumed was there's obviously not a deal in place, you would think, and that the Jaguars maybe really do want to make a go of this. Chris Mortensen reported that Doug Marrone doesn't want Jalen Ramsey to leave the team, which would make sense too. He's a really good football player.
You
on
become
your team.
A worse football team without Jalen Ramsey.
If there's a way they can work through this, and I guess then the question is it really just, is Jalen Ramsey dead set on getting out of there? I don't know. He played Thursday night. This might be a little bit of a, it wouldn't be a buzzkill, but everybody's anticipating this big move that something's going to happen, and especially if the Chiefs or the Patriots get Jalen Ramsey, what does that mean for supremacy in the AFC?
Because every guy like this has gotten moved over the last 3 or 4 months.
I can't use the term I want to use, it involves the word blue, but something might not happen here. We're expecting a big.
Oh, are you talking about when you're frustrated?
Yeah, when you're frustrated. Genitally? Yeah. So like you're expecting this big climax, and it's not going to happen.
Oh.
That's what we're going to get with Jalen Ramsey. I think he ends up playing. There's a really good chance that he just ends up being disgruntled and playing out the rest of the season.
I would say that's another wrinkle to what we were talking about in the previous segment, Seth, where we were looking at the Jags schedule and saying, "Man, this Gardner Minshew thing is going to pick up some steam because their schedule is." It certainly looks a lot more favorable now than it did, a lot like the Texans.
Yeah.
And they play similar schedules, obviously. They're in the same division, where their schedule here in the early part of the season now looks easier than it did before the season. They play the Panthers, who might be missing Cam Newton. They play the Saints, who will be missing Drew Brees. They play the Jets and the Bengals, who aren't very good football teams. They play the Texans, but it's over in London. That's something the Texans aren't used to doing. And the Jags do it every season, that kind of thing. So that could be another wrinkle to where if the Jag and the trade deadline, I believe, is in between weeks 8 and 9, if they're 5-3, 8 games into the season, if I'm Doug Marrone, I'm going, why am I trading Jalen Ramsey? We're in the mix to win the division right now.
And I think maybe that's what you sell to Jalen Ramsey, too. I'd go to him and I'd say, look, we just saw what happened with we both saw what happened with Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney forced his way out, but it's not like he got a long-term deal because he couldn't get a long-term deal.
Yeah.
The rules of the league wouldn't allow it.
Right.
But if Jalen, if you really want what's best for you, we could play this a couple ways. How about you play your ass off up through the trade deadline, and you're either going to be on a good team, competing on a good team and being an integral part of that, or maybe we're awful by that point and we're in a position where maybe we want to trade you, but you've still been playing your ass off. There's a better chance you're going to get a good deal at the trade deadline when you have some leverage to say, hey, you're going to have to give me a deal also, when some team that's in playoff contention wants to trade for you. And it at least gets extended out that far, till the right before the trade deadline.
Dan Graziano of ESPN did a piece, 5 teams that are a fit for a Jalen Ramsey deal. I want to take a look at this, but look at it from a Texans perspective, too. Just look, any move that gets made, you got to be looking at from a standpoint of, okay, it'll be nice to get Jalen Ramsey out of the AFC South, I'm not going to lie, but are you cutting off your nose to spite your face? Is it better for the Texans to have Jalen Ramsey out of the division on a bet, but he was on a bad team, as opposed to now you might only see him in the postseason, but you see him in the postseason, and he's on a good team? The two AFC teams that are in this fivesome are the Chiefs and the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
And their approach with this article is that the Jaguars are looking for a first-round pick. So the Chiefs and the Ravens are both teams right now that it's early in the season. I get it. They're both 2-0. Of those two teams, which one would you, of the Chiefs and the Ravens, do you have a preference, I guess, is what I'm asking as to where Jalen Ramsey winds up?
For one, obviously, I'd want him to go to the NFC.
NFC,
but of the two teams, I would just say the Ravens. I would prefer that he go to the Ravens instead of the Chiefs, because the Chiefs have, but the Chiefs could use the help defensively, and all of a sudden that makes them a complete team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, again, I don't want him to go to the Chiefs. I'd rather have him go to the Ravens. The Ravens, I'm still kind of curious to see the Ravens as it plays out through the season and to see how this feels like a cheap minus to bring up with a player. As awesome as Lamar Jackson has looked in that offense and the way it's structured, I'm still curious to see how they do when they're playing from behind.
When they're playing a good team.
Well, when a team can be in a position of just slowing them down.
Yeah.
And when they could say, okay, go ahead and run the ball. Fine, that's fine. You've got to make up 2 touchdowns. Go ahead and run the ball and see what happens, and we'll just take away the play action threat and all that. I don't know. So I would just say I'd rather see him go to the Ravens, because I don't believe in the Ravens the way I believe in the Chiefs.
Yeah,
right
I think that's a good way to look at it. The Ravens have been ahead literally the whole season. They play each other this weekend, the Ravens and the Chiefs. And I was really tempted to take the Ravens because they're getting almost a touchdown. They played the Chiefs really tough last year. The only loss that Lamar Jackson has suffered as a starter in the NFL so far is to the Kansas City Chiefs, that overtime game where Mahomes threw that 4th down pass across his body just to keep the game alive, and then they went on to beat the Ravens in overtime last year. In the regular season last year.
Yeah, the Chargers game.
In the regular season, that's been Lamar Jackson's only loss. But then I looked, and I'm like, man, I know the Ravens have looked... They looked really impressive against Miami. I just can't take anything out of a game that someone plays against the Dolphins this season as any sort of positive. And then the Cardinals hung in with the Ravens. The Cardinals, they didn't come close to covering the number against them. So then I'm like, I kind of backed off. I'm like, I don't know, man. This is the Chiefs' first home game of the year. They've been on the road the first 2 weeks. I think the Chiefs are going to cover in that game, actually.
What's the spread you said?
6.5.
Okay. Yeah, and that's where it's not that I'm not impressed with Lamar Jackson. It's just the overall structure of their offense and how they operate. Exactly. What are they? Yeah. What are they? And this would be, as you said, the first big test.
Yeah, the 3 NFC teams, by the way, that they had in that article that Graziano had, the Seahawks, the Eagles, and the 49ers.
Which 49ers. One?
Do any of those teams intrigue you more than the others?
The 49ers intrigue me just because defensively what they do. They kind of, and their defensive coordinator actually used to be a coach with the Texans too, and they do a lot of like cover 3 type looks that it makes you think of some of what Seattle was able to do with Richard Sherman and those guys back in the day. A guy like Jalen Ramsey could really, really make that scheme a lot even better. And I don't know what to make of the quarterback right now, though, with San Francisco. Last week, I don't think he necessarily did a lot of great quarterbacking things. I think that was a lot more about Kyle Shanahan and his scheme than it was about the quarterback himself.
I think I've identified one thing that Bill O'Brien and Brian Gain definitely disagreed on. We'll run my hypothesis by Seth Payne next. Yeah, baby. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
Hey, Ali, we need your opinion on something. If you turn around and look at the television screen.
Are they going to show Minshew?
There's a young quarterback. They're going to have to show Minshew by the end of it, I would imagine. They love showing Minshew in his bandana and his hair and his mustache and whatnot.
We need a woman's opinion.
We need a woman's opinion on whether Gardner Minshew does it for you or not, if you find him to be an attractive young man. What's that? We'll point him out. We're going to wait until the end of the screen because Gardner Minshew has a good game last night.
I'll pull him up on the computer in the meantime. Okay.
So Gardner Minshew last night did what I warned Texans fans he was capable of doing before the Texans game. He didn't look as good in the Texans game as he did last night on Thursday Night Football, but he is very much making a very good first impression as a young quarterback. So Aliyah's looking at him. See, he's got kind of
picture,
like a...
I think that picture kind of captures his vibe, right?
80s beach vibe. That's a hard one. No, he's got to make a weird face there. He's making like a Muppet
face. Yeah, I'm not sure on that one. I would say eh.
Okay. He's got a whole vibe about him.
Okay.
I think you'd like
maybe
his vibe.
I just need a better picture.
Okay.
Or watch him play.
See what I can do.
Okay.
So better picture. How about this one? He's got more of a smile on his face there.
Ooh, I'm liking the stash.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's cool. What do you think about the fact that he stretches in the locker room in only a jock strap?
Sexy.
Sexy. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. There's 2 things about
very
that.
Very comfortable.
There's 2 things I don't like about that. Are guys still wearing jock straps?
Apparently he is.
I don't know if that's true or not. Most guys are spandex guys now, just the bike shorts or what have you.
Apparently. I don't know. That mustache is old school, man. I feel like he'd be...
He strikes me as a guy that's probably pretty hairy, too. So it's not just the jock strap. It's a hairy Tom Selleck looking dude.
So you're saying the hair goes top to bottom?
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah.
This just in, a locker room is a pretty disgusting place. I feel like some dude with a porn mustache and a bandana stretching in only a jock strap, it kind of just fits in an NFL locker room like a, it's just like another ride at Disney World. Like, oh yeah, there's the carousel, there's the Peter Pan ride, there's a little roller coaster with the seven dwarfs.
No. That's weird because your jock, if you're stretching in front of your locker room naked, you're next to other people that are sitting down.
That's not just a normal thing that goes on?
No, it's not a normal thing. Like, it's reported because it's not normal.
Yeah, I
guess
you're right.
It's just weird. There was a guy at the Texans early on. He's a front office employee. And
stretched in a jock strap?
He's not with the Texans anymore. No. But he used to, for one, there were two things that he did. One is in the cafeteria, he would do this. He would go by the buffet. Let's say there's like a cheese and the fruit and cheese out of the buffet or something. Mm. He would pick up a piece of cheese from the buffet.
Like a cube?
Look at it.
No,
put it back.
No.
You do this with other food items too. He might take up a
with
piece
his
of fruit.
Grimy hands?
Yes. Look at it and then place it back. Like he was a four-year-old or something. And then the other thing that he would do...
Did somebody ever tell him to stop doing that?
Well, they sent out a memo. Because wait. Okay. So then the other thing he would do is he would, in the bathroom, he'd be buck naked in the bathroom, in the locker room. There's a locker room for both coaches and some of the staff members, some of the front office staff. He would stand there and put his foot up on the counter. He'd stand, put one foot up on the counter, buck naked, and then take the hairdryer and blow his nether regions with a hairdryer in front
Ted
of everybody.
Ted used to complain about a guy at his gym that did that.
Yeah.
Might have been the same guy.
Yeah, no. He doesn't live around here anymore. I wouldn't be telling the story if it wasn't. So
they drove him to the city limits.
They did one of these things where they sent out an
Kicked
nobody
him
wanted
out.
To address it personally, so they just sent out a memo to the entire staff.
Okay, now hang on. Did they send out a memo about the cheese cube thing and the blow dryer of the Grundle thing?
I don't know if they did anything about the blow dryer thing or not.
Okay.
I feel like, it's one of those things, I think if it were a coach or something, one of the other coaches would have just said, what the hell are you doing? You know, unless it's the head coach. But there's something about a front office employee that I feel like everybody probably is a little bit nervous to say anything, so nobody said anything.
Boy, that is really flexing your muscles as a front office guy.
They had to send a memo about the food, because that's a safety item. That's a safety issue.
And
you know?
The blow dryer thing isn't?
You think about that. He goes straight from blow drying his ass into feeling up the cheese cubes. He was the whole damn buffet had a Me Too case. It was... disgusting, this guy.
I'm being sued by a cheese platter.
I was fondled without permission.
Oh, God, that is horrible. So what was his name? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
you can tell me later. So speaking of the front office, the Texans are...
To be clear, if anybody's guessing right, he wasn't like a big name, but nobody would guess it.
Okay.
It wasn't, yeah.
You're
getting
a lot of Rick Smith on
No. Yeah, honestly, and I'm being 100% completely honest here. It
Charlie
wasn't,
Casserly.
It wasn't a big name at all. This was like, it was one of these, how
hey,
casually.
Look, see?
Boy,
hey, look,
that would be.
See?
Okay. See? Yeah, see? This is what, so what's going on, see? Let me tell you about a dingleberry. It's a... Well, the whole thing about Trell Owens, you see, we used to evaluate him at the combine, and he didn't have the dingleberry quotient was.
I'm the blow dryer.
I wonder what the hell that was. Is that what dingleberry sound like? No, it wasn't Casserly.
It wasn't Casserly.
It wasn't anybody that anybody would guess.
Thanks, Seth.
It was like a more nondescript, non-public front office.
Text message. Thanks, Seth. I didn't want breakfast anyway.
Well, I didn't tell you to picture Casserly doing it. This was not like a,
Is there anybody that is pleasurable to picture doing that?
You didn't have to get detailed in your description.
Oh,
it definitely wasn't like Schwarzenegger or somebody like that. Yeah,
because that'd be fine if he was doing it.
Office employee least likely to blow dry his ass with his foot up on the counter, I would say, would definitely probably be Casserly.
Yeah.
I could never see Rick Smith doing that.
No.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. It was a weird thing.
I think it's a weird thing for human beings
in a work
do.
Environment,
yeah.
Especially. Yeah.
Yeah. Let alone front office.
One time down here, when I used to ride my bike to work when it was possible, I got here one day and I took my shower down in the company gym there area. And I realized,
in this building here?
Yeah, in this building. And I realized I'd forgotten a towel. And it was at the time I was doing the midday show, and it was like 9:40 a.m. So what am I going to do? I had no choice but to use a combination of paper towels and the wall-mounted hand dryer. It had a movable nozzle. So I was buck naked. Dude. There and waiting just and it's right next to the main door too. So I kind of had the towel next to me and I had my eye on the door the whole time as I was like contorting myself trying to get dried off in this dryer.
Wow.
So if somebody walked in, I was gonna have to snap the towel back around.
It's pretty resourceful.
Yeah,
you had to dry off with paper towels.
Paper towels and a blow dryer.
You're a gigantic human being. How many rolls of paper towels did
I didn't. It never completely got the job done because I started sweating midway. You contort yourself
you're
like
a sweater.
This, and I'm like I'm creating sweat as I'm trying. So then I just threw my clothes on wet and came up. And
were
did
you
radio.
Sweating more out of contortion or out of just the pure stress of the situation?
Stress of almost being found out.
Yeah.
Like, there's more. There's
and the fact you had a show to do in 20 minutes.
No, it was one of those. Yeah, it was one of those things too where you work out and you try to take a shower immediately after.
Yeah.
You're going to sweat anyway.
I hear you.
Yeah.
So somehow I found myself on the press conference Bill O'Brien did back during the Brian Gain era, right before the combine. And I got to thinking about some of the moves that William O'Brien, Esquire General Manager, has made over the last several weeks. And I think I think like we're going to be doing the autopsy on the Gain-O'Brien relationship for some time going forward. Maybe until the team has another general manager in place. We're going to be trying to figure out, okay, what exactly went sideways? What could have gone sideways transactionally that led to the breakup of O'Brien and Gain as the aligned, non-flat structure to run this team.
Uh-huh.
And I think I found one that they may have disagreed on. All right?
Yep.
I'm going to play the audio, and then I'm going to tell you my forensics and my handicap on why I think this is the case. Here is Bill O'Brien talking about Tyrann Mathieu. This is back before Mathieu signed with the Chiefs. This is Bill O'Brien talking about how awesome Tyrann Mathieu is.
He's a guy that really meant a lot to our locker room. I mean, I've said it time and time again. This guy came in and was there from the off-season program, and then at the end of the training camp was voted a team captain. I mean, I think that says a lot about the impact he had, just not just as a player, but also what he meant leadership-wise in the locker room. So there's no doubt that we would love to have Tyrann back.
Tyrann went for $14 million a year to Kansas City, which at the time I didn't have a big problem with them not paying. Had I known they would have $45 million in cap space at the end of the offseason, I probably would have felt differently.
It's true. We assumed, well, hey, you don't want to spend $14 million when you're about to spend on a big left tackle, right?
Which they didn't spend on that either.
No.
Yeah. So in retrospect, I probably would have been like, okay, well, if you're not going to spend it, at least spend it on the Honey Badger. Between that cut, the fact that Bill O'Brien gave $11 million a year to Nick Martin based almost solely on leadership, I have to think that $14 million probably felt like a bargain for a guy who was actually good at football.
Yeah.
And Tyrann Mathieu. So that is where I'm putting my
but
chips.
But I don't know, because I'm looking at Tyrann Mathieu, and I think of specific games where Tyrann Mathieu himself and his mistakes versus tight ends might have cost you the game.
Uh-huh.
Like the
and
Eagles
Nick Martin
game.
Didn't have any mistakes?
Well, oh, Nick Martin, right. Yeah, no, Nick Martin's a whole
so
different
I'm saying
stuff.
It's a combo.
But I don't know. I'm actually, I think if I'm Bill O'Brien looking at it, what did Tyrann Mathieu do last year that really impressed you all that much?
He did. I mean, forced a couple turnovers early on in the season.
Yeah.
He didn't tackle very well. You're right. Look, I was somebody who said I don't think you should spend $14 million on him. You know, in retrospect, like I said, if I knew they were going to spend nothing,
right.
I'd rather have Tyrann Mathieu than nothing. Although I think Tayshaun Gibson may wind up being fine in this whole thing. I'm with you. Like I think the
but
myth
that
of
was,
the Honey Badger is okay. much bigger than the actuality of the Honey
but
Badger.
But for whatever reason, you think Bill O'Brien really liked the
yes,
Honey Badger.
Yes, I think here's why I'm injecting the Nick Martin thing. I think O'Brien is a guy who might overvalue all these esoteric leadership qualities in guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think that Bill O'Brien probably would have spent a lot more of the cap money than Brian Gain did. I think we've seen that by the way he's behaved as the general manager since he took the job and giving Nick Martin contracts, overpaying to get Laremy Tunsil, maybe underplaying what they got out of Jadeveon Clowney. Like I think O'Brien just wants good players in here. I don't think he's really into the whole, well, you're a good player at $12 million, but at $13.5 million, I don't know.
He wants to pay because or if you're good, then here. Here's
if
the money.
You love the guy.
We'll keep you. Yeah. But that's like me on a shopping spree when I've got a budget, but like, I mean, that's the problem with the difference between a head coach and a general manager. The head coach would love to buy everything. The head coach is me. I'm telling you.
Right.
Every weakness that Bill O'Brien has as a head coach, I see. It's like I'm looking in the mirror. He's impulsive. He's temperamental. He makes snap decisions. He might not have all that great a sense of spending under a budget. All these things that Bill O'Brien does as a GM, that's me as a person.
So I ask you.
Right, right.
I ask you, is there validity to my hypothesis?
I think there's a validity to it. But I do wonder, though, too, because one of the things that he talked about in that press conference at the Combine is how it's important to build through the draft and not free agency.
Yeah, we need to go back through some of the quotes from that press. That was an amazing press conference in retrospect.
He's done the exact opposite. Yes. Now, it hasn't been free agency. It's been trading, which is even more expensive than free agency.
But it's going out and getting guys who have, like, the big thing, it was the draft for the purpose of getting guys, quote, into your culture.
Right, right.
And he's gone out and got a bunch of guys who haven't spent any time in this culture.
He spent, like, Larry Tunsil spent time in Miami's culture.
He did.
Did he pick up some good stuff there?
I like him so far.
I do like him so far. Yeah. He's taking personal responsibility for sacks that weren't from last year.
He's practically taking personal responsibility for the 62 times it happened when he wasn't even on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did point out that a lot of the sacks aren't the offensive line's fault.
Yeah.
He said it's the running backs, the tight ends, it's everybody. But he didn't do it like in a throwing anybody else under the bus kind of way. So, but since Bill O'Brien in that press conference gushed about Tyrann Mathieu, this is what I'm saying. Take with a grain of salt anything he said in that press conference, because he also said how important it is to build through the draft.
That's true.
And then he traded away his next two first-round picks. Yeah, yeah. The exact opposite of building through the draft.
Yeah,
he brought in a guy more expensive than a free agent because he spent two first-round picks and he's going to have to pay him a big contract. So everything he said in that press conference, I might just throw it completely out the window.
That feels like a Wednesday thing next week to do, I think.
No.
Go back through that pre-combine. Oh, okay. I watched the whole press conference. Don't ask me how I wound up on it.
Yeah.
I was looking for something for a piece that I was writing. And so I got sucked in because I'm like, oh, well, let's see how much of the stuff in this press conference has either come to fruition or completely been burned like a bunch of books in the backyard. Right. And a lot of it's been burned like a bunch of books in the backyard.
I think the biggest thing about O'Brien is, like, he's pretty proficient at the coach speak. And where I've come to realize over time is it's hard for you to bring up anything he said in a press conference to me and think and convince me that he actually meant anything by it.
Yeah.
Like, he's really good with giving the platitudes and things like that, but I don't know if you ever necessarily really learn something when he talks about certain things.
No, but some of the stuff is interesting in retrospect. Like, he was very complimentary of Jadeveon Clowney in that press conference.
Right.
Like, very complimentary.
Yeah.
He,
which, again, like, so it didn't necessarily mean anything.
Well, except that they dumped him for a third-round pick and a couple of guys. Like, he was talking about him like a player they would want to keep around.
Right, which is what I'm saying. It was the opposite of what it actually was.
But the thing, some of the things that lined up, like the Mathieu thing, to me, lined up perfectly with what I think O'Brien would have done. Like, the Kareem Jackson, he talked about Mathieu and what a great leader he was. He kind of talked a little less effusively about Kareem Jackson. He's been a good player, and he's originally drafted here, and he's been here for a long time. And, hey, it takes two to tango, and that's business. And they end up not even offering the guy a contract. Like, okay, that lined up.
Right, that did line up. But that was when the guy who was in charge was the guy that ended up getting fired, too. So that would have been in line with what Bill O'Brien wanted. I guess this is where I'm going with it, is that I think you might be giving Bill O'Brien too much credit for kind of having any kind of strategy at all, where really in reality, I think what it is he didn't like some of the things Brian Gain did, and at some point he starts blaming other people for, like, I think there's a lot of blame game at times with anybody, with any human being, but with O'Brien, because of his impulsiveness and because of his temper and because of other elements, I feel like it might have just been as simple as Bill O'Brien looking at this roster at a certain point in time and getting fed up and saying, this isn't where I want to be right now.
He's definitely looking at it through a different prism back in February than he was come July. No doubt about
that. Something switched in him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was Easterby or not. I know that, look, Albert Breer wants you to know that Jack Easterby isn't a hatchet man, but he said that before anybody said that Jack Easterby was a hatchet man, which makes me wonder, is Jack Easterby...
You think thou doth protest too much?
Yeah, exactly. Why am I reading an article by Albert Breer where one of Easterby's friends says, he's not a hatchet man? I'm like, whoa, wait a second. I didn't even say you're a hatchet.
You're going to feel like he is over the next 6 months.
That's like when you walk in and somebody had spilled the milk and one of your children says, I didn't do it.
Like, more often than not.
Clearly you did this. Yeah.
You are a hatchet man.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.